Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
know like,
nothing
like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull out the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
To do worse than Josh Richer. Sun shone across my back, and I'm comforted to know that you're backstage at my show.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this old school Monday night. What better way to go old school than to have a chat with our good friend? But before we need to do that, I do need to bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
JR, you look fabulous in a powder blue blazer tonight, I must say.
Thank you.
You have powder blue on.
I was pressing it all weekend.
Yes, and in honor of Bruno, I'm wearing the old championship wrestling mustard yellow blazer tonight. So, welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 203 of the Place to Be Podcast. I forgot to open the thing. Yeah, 203. 203 of the Place to Be Podcast. And it is Monday night, of course, old school Raw going on as we speak, but of course... I will DVR that later, and you can check out my blog on bigelow34.proboards.com and the premier blog on the Wrestling Rambles.
Yes. So. Scott Criscola getting syndicated.
Look at that, huh?
Big time on us now.
It's like, hey, I show up for every episode. All right. JR, it is 2:03. We are switching things up a little bit tonight.
With the mercy of our guest, whenever we can be granted to be at his presence. We have to jump at the opportunity, of course. Now, I've been hurting all day, so I'm going to try and pull it together. I went through an entire box of tissue at work, so I am not in good physical shape, but I had a giant piece of salmon that I grilled for dinner, so my brain is sharp and ready to go. I'm hydrated.
Were we watching the Brian Pillman documentary today?
And
that's why we had the box of tissues.
Yes. No. And we are ready to talk some 1998. So to finish off that year, of course, we're moving into 99. This week, later on, with Mike Rude on Wednesday. But before we get there, we're going to put a bow on 98. All right, and of course, joining us now, the great, the effervescent, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly. Kevin, welcome back, as always.
Howdy, boys. How's everything?
Good, Kev.
Yeah, we're doing
good
well.
To talk to you again.
Yeah, same here.
Busy week?
It was a long weekend. We're taping this late on Monday night after a robust weekend of Ring of Honor action for the 11th anniversary, the taping 4 hours of TV, and flying home, going to work today. So,
yeah, busy weekend for you. The pay-per-view on Saturday night, and then busy Sunday. So, yeah, you definitely took it to the limit.
And I, you know, don't give enough credit to the boys for, you know, because pretty much everybody that was on the pay-per-view Saturday turned around and wrestled less than 18 hours later. So, and you know, from going from a pay-per-view match to a TV match, it's very grueling, but they're amazing athletes. I'm professional wrestling. And they always used to say it like almost, you know, just, it was hyperbole when you heard it, but just I amaze at how athletic these guys are and what tremendous athletes they really, really are. You know, because when we were kids and before us even, you know, there were some guys that didn't look too athletic, and they certainly could wrestle in that style in that era. But what these guys are able to do today, there isn't anything else like it. I mean, there's other fighters and stuff like this that, and other athletes that can go, but the physicality, the pounding, it's just it's unbelievable.
So pay-per-view looks like it got some pretty good reviews from what I saw with the whole stuff with Scum turning and expanding, trying to take over Ring of Honor.
Carino is a habitual liar, and you know, normally we don't, you know, you don't believe a word he says, but he was actually right for once. So, but he does, you know, he does have a great track record because he has put a lot of companies out of business.
So,
if there's somebody that's gonna, you know, put the nail in the coffin and shut us down in Ring of Honor once and for all, Carino's a great guy to lead the movement.
It looks like a pretty good card shaping up for the show we'll be in attendance at WrestleMania weekend. One of the Briscoes taking on Steen, correct?
Yeah, Jay's wrestling Steen for the world title. And let's see, Red Dragon, the new tag team champs, defend against the American Wolves. And
Lethal and Elgin.
Lethal and Elgin. Winner gets a future world title shot.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. Is Shelton and Haas, is that set?
Shelton and Haas, yep.
That'll be good, too.
Shelton versus Haas.
Yep.
I got to find out if that's the first time they've ever wrestled. Somebody asked me that, and I wasn't sure, and I said, you know, there could have been, like, some goofy Raw roulette match sometime where they got thrown in against one another, but...
I can ask our friend Graham Cawthon. Maybe he knows.
I want to find that out.
Well, that match this week on TV was excellent. Briscoes and... World's Greatest Tag Team. I really enjoyed that.
It was again what I was happy with that match from like a broadcaster standpoint. And think about this too. Think about just the timing of it. How low is a guy to turn on his tag team partner of 10 years in the middle of a world title match?
That ends with them breaking up if they lose.
Yes, exactly. But all they had to do was win.
Right.
But Charlie Austin, just to cement his legacy in Ring of Honor for being such a piece of garbage of what he is, you know? I mean, it's just, I thought it was, you know, looking back on it now, it's like, wow, that's good stuff. And, you know, it's worth checking out the TV show if you don't. Some folks live in markets where they can check it out and they've already seen it, or, you know, you can see it on ROHWrestling.com. If you're a Ringside member, it goes up today. If you're just a general member, you can watch it Thursday. So definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, and I've been reviewing it every week on our board, so I've seen every one this year, and I've really enjoyed it. So, you know, I've had kind of cursory following of Ring of Honor in the past. This is where the first time I've been able to really watch weekly, so I've been enjoying the trip. Looking forward to April. Kevin, before we get to 98, I got a couple of ROH questions from our buddy Steve Willey, one of our avid listeners, and I thought I might as well bring him up now while we're chatting anyway.
Yeah.
He wanted to know if you had any thoughts on El Generico's last couple years in Ring of Honor. Do you think they could have done more with him, or do you think he kind of maxed out there?
I am always been a firm believer that less is more, and that El Generico had wrestled so many times throughout Ring of Honor in all the great cities that we go to through the years that he had done, that it's like, how do you top it? So you almost have to make him more of an attraction. And that seeing him is a special thing, because he really is he's a special athlete. There's nobody else like him. I think if you have steak every day, you get a little sick of steak. So could they have done a little more with him? I don't know, what else did they want him to do? He had fantastic matches all the way through, and he was involved in the feud of the year with Kevin Steen, following up with a world television title run, and then culminating with a final battle rematch against Kevin Steen. I think it was pretty damn good.
Do you think he'll make it, or do you think they'll use him right? WWE?
And again, this only has to do, this has nothing to do with his talent and his ability. this has everything to do with their mindset,
right,
and what they want. It's the flavor of the week. Mm-hmm. It's the special of the day. This is what they want now. Tomorrow, they might want, Kenyan bobsledders. That's what we want now. We're looking for Kenyan bobsledders. Who knows? But for at least this time, until something else comes up, it's Ring of Honor wrestlers. So good for them. I hope they all get very, very rich, because some of them will have to, give me money when I'm old and decrepit.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. You don't have to answer. Is there anything going on with Cole, Adam Cole? Is he leaving? Is that why they took the title off him? Because I know there's that rumor that he went to the tryout.
He did. Had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the evolution of Adam Cole. But nothing's guaranteed,
Right.
Nothing is guaranteed. There's this belief that you can't have guys, just because they get an opportunity to try out and do something, that doesn't mean they're going to get picked. Now, I would say they're fools if they don't, because he's amazing, and so is Bennett. Bennett's incredible. But no, everything is straightforward, full speed ahead with everything that had been talked about previously as far as matchups and where to go.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
Good.
All right, last question from Steve. Any thoughts on Nigel's documentary, if you've seen it?
I haven't seen it, and I talked with Nigel this weekend about it, because I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it. I was asking, aside from just buying the documentary and sitting down and watch it, is there some online way to watch it? And yeah, you can. So I haven't sat down to watch it yet. When I watched Beyond the Mat, it made me sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this movie's going to make me sad. Because I love Nigel. I have such respect for him. And I don't think he gives himself enough credit. I've talked to him about it. He's like, I never made it. You were Ring of Honor World Champion. I mean, he never made it big in the WWE. He didn't become, the big star there. Okay, I get that. I understand. But damn, what he did was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree.
He should be. I worked in the WWE. I never made it. I never did what I wanted to do there. But I'm doing what I wanted to do in Ring of Honor. So I'm doing what I wanted to do.
Right.
In my own terms, in my own way. To me, it's ultimately more satisfying, infinitely more satisfying, to be in Ring of Honor, to do what I'm doing now. And I stood on the floor of the Houston Astrodome broadcast in front of 70,000 people, stood in the middle of the ring, Greensboro, North Carolina, standing there with Kane and Paul Bearer when they ignited the ropes and demonstrating the Inferno match. No other broadcaster ever did that. Me. I'm the only one that ever did. I interviewed The Rock. I was synonymous with The Rock in terms of WWE interviews. People still ask me about it to this day, and it was over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I get the most personal enjoyment out of is calling these Ring of Honor matches and being inside those barricades. There's nothing else like it.
I think it shows in the commentary.
God's honest truth, guys.
We believe you.
No, yeah. Definitely. No, you could tell. Justin's right. You could totally tell in your commentary.
Yeah, that's
true to heart.
Again, that's why it's so easy. The best match that I called yesterday, absolutely one of the, it's going to be one of my most favorite matches of all time. It was Red Dragon, Fish and O'Reilly, against Forever Hooligans, and for a TV match, with the Wolves doing commentary with me, and Davey and Eddie, we had a conversation. I asked them questions, because Davey knows Rocky so well, and they didn't always get along so well, and Eddie rivals with Bobby Fish in ROH, but his tag partner in New Japan, or in NOAH, rather. Excuse me. So I just had a chance to ask him questions and have conversation. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And it didn't take away from the match at all, because then we would get back and talk about these four phenomenal athletes that were standing there in front of us.
I'll have to look forward to that.
And damn, those freaking hooligans are good.
Mm-hmm.
Holy mackerel. I'd seen one match of theirs on YouTube and was like, oh, okay, yeah, they're good. No, they are freaking awesome. They are the real deal. And they're the perfect blend because Kozlov is a fantastic athlete, just an amazing striker, does everything well. But Romero is the veteran, and Romero puts it all together. And he makes he takes the ham sandwich and turns it into a gourmet meal.
Wow.
He really, the gear that they have, and Rocky did their entrance music, and that's $10 million. So, I mean, it's huge. They got money written all over them. And it's just, I don't know why they missed the boat with Kozlov. I don't know what happened. I don't know what was going on. But I don't know what they saw, but it certainly wasn't the same guy I saw both Saturday and Sunday.
Hmm. Well, I'm curious to check him out now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that going to be on this week, do you know, or was that taped for a future week coming up?
That is the week of Super Card of Honor.
Okay, cool.
So that would be the weekend of April 4th and 5th.
All right, awesome.
Excellent.
Kev, speaking of great athletes and beyond the mat, have you seen who's on Facebook now?
No, who's on Facebook?
I don't do any tricks.
Mr. Dennis Stamp.
Is he really?
Yes, yep. And he is accepting any and all friend requests in states he loves to tell stories about his career. So trust me, the request has already been made for him to join us.
The wheels are in motion.
You must get him on the show.
Oh, we're trying. And
the
trust
interview
me,
you never thought you'd hear.
We have all of our listeners have befriended him as well and are hitting with messages that he's going to come on our show. So I'm hoping it works. We'll see.
If I can help in that regard, please let me know.
Okay. Oh. Well, I dropped the you were on the list of name dropping, but I had to put J.J. Dillon up top. So, you know how it goes.
Well, sure, because, Dillon spent a lot of time in Texas, and I'm sure they worked together.
Yep, so hopefully that'll help us out. See, he vows to get back to everyone that's written to him, so we'll see. I'm sure he's getting inundated on these last week that he's been on Facebook.
Like the scene of Steve Martin in The Jerk after the lawsuit, where he's handwriting all of those settlement checks, $1.38.
Yeah. I just jump. I stay fit. I watch what I eat.
Oh, God.
See, that might be the toughest interview we've ever done because you don't want to be disrespectful to the guy, but you got to ask the questions. You have to ask him about the movie. But...
Yeah, and you have to ask him, why don't you do any tricks?
Yes, do you still work out on the trampoline?
And maybe you should.
The call finally came, so hopefully.
And the ultimate question: what were those arrangements?
Yes. Yeah. What did you have to do with it? You couldn't referee this match.
Referee this match. Were you really going to Sizzler with your aunt? I mean, who knows? We'll see.
All right. Let's head back to a time before that movie was released, and that is not too long before it, but the late summer into fall and winter of 1998. We left off right around SummerSlam last time you were on, Kevin. So I'm going to turn it over to Scott to get things kicked off here.
Okay.
Okay. We begin August 30th, 1998, Madison Square Garden. To me, and to a lot of our listeners, and to JR kind of as well, this was probably, in my opinion, the pay-per-view that might have finally turned the corner and put the World Wrestling Federation in the lead. Because top to bottom, that was probably one of the greatest shows ever, SummerSlam 1998. That main event, Stone Cold and Undertaker, would you say, Kevin, at least at the time, for that era, almost as big as, say, Warrior Hogan? I mean, was this a big main event, a turning point main event for the company at that moment in time?
As great as that match was, I think that part of the mindset of everybody at that time, it's difficult to compare eras in terms of long-lasting effect in one match. Hogan, Rock, yes. Rock Cena. Yeah, maybe. The first Austin Rock match, yes. But there, since SummerSlam is SummerSlam and it's not WrestleMania, I think it's hard to compare the two. Plus, in that time frame, I'm telling you what, there was just as much emphasis on Raw the next night as there was on SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
And that the mindset of everybody is that pay-per-view was one thing, it was important, but it was all about Raw, it was all about the TV show. So yeah, as great of a main event as that was, and that was sort of the kind of the division between Vince Russo and the wrestlers, because the wrestlers valued the wrestling. The pay-per-view and the live events were sort of their outlet, and you know, television was Russo's domain, and they hated him by and large. And when the pay-per-views and the pay-per-view matches started getting more gimmicky and taking away from what they loved to do, there was always great resentment. But JR helped smooth things over and, you know, helped keep, you know, large wrestler hands off of Vince Russo's skinny Italian throat. So that match was great. And, of course, the famous story, which is true, is that Austin got KO'd in the opening spot, forgot everything in the match, and Earl Hebner basically had to remember everything for that match and recited it back to him throughout the entire rest of the way, bell to bell.
Yep. What happened was, for those that may not know, we mentioned it at the show, what happened was Taker was going for a backdrop, and Austin pounced off the ropes, and he did, you know, the usual, I'm not going for it, so he kicked him in the gut, and Taker lifted his head up, and Stone Cold kind of was sticking out a little too far, and the back of Taker's head went square into Austin's chin. And pretty much, yeah, like you said, Kev, pretty much knocked him into next Christmas. And he was definitely a little punch drunk for the. But they still put on an awesome match, even not knowing what the hell was going on. Still a pretty good match, considering he was half out of it.
Right, and literally, at that point, if it was a different time, if that was today, what would they have done? You know, and if it's not the right mix of guys, think about, Scott, what you said about how great that match was. Mm-hmm. But yet how close it was to never being.
Yep.
You know? I mean, if that concussion that he got, because that's what he got, if that concussion was perhaps just slightly more severe and he's out cold, now what do?
Yeah.
You know? You ring the bell and you try to figure your way out of it. You run some guys in, you know, and you know you're going to get pelted with garbage because the people are going to hate it, but your main event just got knocked out. There isn't anything you can do. You know, with Kurt Angle and, you know, the next year, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a few months. Knocked out cold.
Yep.
was supposed to be knocked out. Well, I'm being knocked out for real.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing it doesn't happen more. I mean, through all the matches in history, you'd think it would have happened a little more often than that. And also, like, even, you know, one that I always think about is the Royal Rumble. What if the winner accidentally gets knocked out over the top? Then what? Is there a contingency plan back there for that?
You know, that's a very good question. And I never heard of one.
Mm.
And I think it's more of a, well, that just won't happen.
Well, I mean, the two closest you think of would be, I guess, 1995 and 2002, because both, you know, both Shawn and Triple H pulled some cat skinning. And what if the camera catches both their feet? Then what do you do?
Yeah, right.
Kevin Dunn switches the camera? I mean, you know, it's like,
well,
you don't know what to
do. Was it Brett and Lex?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Now, was there some TV shenanigans with that? Or was it legit?
Haven't we heard? I thought someone...
It was planned. I'm not sure if that's right. It was definitely planned.
Well, no. It was planned, but did...
Did it come off planned? Or did it come off...
Come off did it... Or did they edit it to make it correct?
For people that have with it, because I was actually there, but I was way up high on that show. But people that were ringside later have said that you could tell Luger hit first, but they never really showed a good angle. They'd always kind of freeze it as they're about to hit the floor. I think it was almost as close as you could get the way they
did it. Well, look at 2000 when Big Show and Rock fell out at the same time. And, you know, people say Rock's feet hit the ground, but he just bounced back up and Big Show rolled. But the camera didn't show Rock's feet. That was a big thing.
Yeah, because I remember they were trying to say, well, because Rock landed on... Didn't Rock kind of land on Big Show a little bit?
Yeah.
And
it's kind of over. Yeah.
Yeah, but there... See, right. And I remember that conversation then going back to Brett Lex with, well, did it really happen that way, or is this... You know, because if you think about it, other than Shawn, Triple H, they're kind of 0-for-2 in those deals.
Right.
Where there is, you know... Ooh, what happened? Well, clear video evidence shows that, dang, it was close. But Big Show had a hell of a bitch. And they played it up on TV. I remember it being really, really good because he was justified. He was right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's very interesting how that all came about to be. But yeah, it's funny how certain elements, you know, can affect the outcome of a match, and the main event was affected, albeit, you know, no one ever knew, except the guys inside the barricade that half of the main event and half of one of the best matches in the Attitude Era of WWE got, you know, knocked loopy in the first 5 minutes.
All right. So also around this time, leading into SummerSlam, we saw the return on screen of Shawn Michaels. Came in, did some commentary, and mainly just playing babyface. Was he supposed to stick around at this point? Any idea when he'd be back, or is it still just kind of, wait and see?
It was wait and see. Let's see how Sean is. Let's see how Sean feels. I remember really enjoying Sean's commentary, and I talked to him about it. I told him, I said, listen, you could do this. You can do this. You have a great voice. You can... really, and he was into it. He was enjoying it. I told him I would help him in any way I can. If there was any, you know, with preparing, with showing him how to do whatever, because I thought he sounded cool. I think it all blew up a few months later at the Boston Garden, actually, when Sean showed up and he hadn't been told what he was doing. They'd gotten him a ticket, and when he got there, I guess Russo had nothing for him or something like that. There was some big miscommunication. And so he kind of flipped out, and then he wound up staying home, I think.
Well, he does come back later in the year. We'll get to that when he shows up as the commissioner and all that stuff. This is like just for that few weeks he popped in as a commentator and did some stuff with DX and whatnot. But all right, Scott, go ahead. Ask about your boy.
Also, at that night at the Garden, Kevin, besides Austin Taker, was that very, very well done Rock Triple H ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship, which, of course, Triple H won. How big was that win for him that night in terms of elevating him at that moment? But, you know, it was a pretty big win. Rock was on an awesome roll as IC champ. He held it for pretty much a whole year. How big was the win for him that night in terms of elevating? And then, of course, he hurt his knee and ended up having to forfeit the title a month later anyway.
I think that it was, again, always trying to prove his worth in a big spot, but there was an injury. Everybody forgets he was very injury-prone in the early part of his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was.
And a series of ups and downs, and knee was bad, and back was bad. And so, yeah, there were some questions about durability at that point. But, you know, we knew he could deliver, and he certainly did. I just remember Mark Henry being involved in that match, just going, why is Mark Henry involved in this match at all? He was involved in that match, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he had the thing going on with China, and then that gave her the opening to get involved. And
they did, you know, gave Rock the nut shot.
I think it was partly to help start the split of the nation, maybe. So give Rock kind of a reason to say, you know, leave me alone, I'm on my own kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. I guess.
Ugh. So, okay.
So around this time too, Kevin, right before SummerSlam, Sunday Night Heat kicked off. Any thoughts on the addition of that show? Memories of it in the early days?
The vehicle for Shane McMahon to be a color commentator. I liked Shane a lot. I worked with him.
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy. Just mentally exhausting to do commentary with, but fun. You know, but wanted to get it right, but had ADD.
Really?
Oh, yeah, wicked ADD.
Wow.
So, you know, it was hard to get him to settle down and focus.
Was that commentary all done live early on, or was it? Did you do it in the studio for those first couple months? Because he was a big deal in the beginning.
It was, and it, just like with everything in WWE, we'll do it live, pal. It starts off live, it's going to be this big thing, and then eventually it settles into, we'll just record it in post. So that's what when I was doing them with Shane, I was doing them in post in Stanford. Mm-hmm. So one hour of heat took 4 hours. Hmm. You know, me and Terry Taylor, me and Jim Cornette, me and somebody else would do it. 1 hour would take 50 minutes.
Okay. Also at the time, the roster kind of expanded. We had some young blood started to come in. Guys like Draws and D'Lo came into his own in 98. And then, of course, The Brood, Gangrel, Christian, and Edge, a guy that, of course, would really, well, both Edge and Christian would blossom from this crew. Val Venus. What were your thoughts on these guys as they were like burgeoning in mid to late 98?
I was getting really happy for them because, again, as we talked about last time, you know, having seen them from the first time when they came down and did that one camp with Dr. Tom and Dory Funk Jr., and then being able to see them get off and get running. Plus, I was really happy for Dave Heath and as Gangrel because he was a friend of mine from Florida and still is to this day. And I just think he's, you know, Luna's longtime husband, I thought was just a cool dude. And I was really, really happy for him that he was finally making some money and doing something.
Yeah, I remembered him as the Vampire Warrior always popping up in the PWI 500. He was always kind of on those rankings in there. And see him pop up. I feel like of the brood, though, Edge and Christian just kind of took off, and I feel like he got a raw deal because when they first started, he seemed to be the guy they were mainly focusing on, and he had the awesome entrance and the, you know, music and the sunglasses and everything else. And then he kind of just faded off. Anything behind that? Anything backstage? Or do you think they just saw more in Edge and Christian?
Well, I think that, you know, splitting them, using... I think it's the natural evolution of pro wrestling, is that you use... you use something bigger to introduce somebody new, let the audience get to, you know, let them marinate on these guys for a while, and then let's start to see some of their real personalities and some of the things that they can do. So it was what it was. And Dave was kind of, you know, he had, you know, injury here, injury there, you know, this torn, that torn. So it was, he was dealing with some nagging stuff, but nothing that really prevented him from being able to go. Just maybe some things, maybe they had kind of done a lot of stuff with him. And what are you going to do with a guy like that? You know, is he a main event guy? Could you have Gangrel, you know, WWE World Champion, you know, Gangrel?
That was
the age old question. Could you ever hear, you know, the new WWE champion Val Venus? You're not going to hear it. That's why you're never going to hear WWE champion Dolph Ziggler.
Do you, I lost my train of thought now.
Blew you away with that Dolph
Ziggler. Yeah, you made a good point. Now you knocked me off track.
What do you think of, I'll pick it up here. What do you think of, what do you think of D'Lo? Because here was a guy who, you know,
I love
he was
D'Lo,
a lot of shape in the beginning and then kind of like, you know, trimmed down a bit and then suddenly he just took off.
Well, D'Lo was good, and you know, he had come from Smoky Mountain and was just put in there as a guy who could, because they wanted to do the, you know, the nation thing, and get that started, and have, you know, we called them the Bowtie Brigade, but they couldn't work. I think some of them were Ahmed Johnson's friends, but none of them really knew how to do anything except for D'Lo. So when they needed Ahmed Johnson to put somebody through a table. Yeah, in that match, I think it was at the Royal Rumble, that was where it became D'Lo. And he did good, and he got himself a job out of it. And that's pretty, to me, that's pretty cool. You know, that here was a guy that just got a booking as a one-time thing, and it turned out to be a hell of a long career. So, but yeah, very talented and could do anything, fantastic athlete, didn't always look like, you know, the you know, certainly didn't have the Adonis body, more the Adrian Adonis body, but it was
thank God.
He could work though. He could really go, and a great personality, really good dude.
You think Gangrel, is my point, I just remember. Do you think Gangrel was ahead of his time? Do you think if he came in more the 2000s when the vampire shit was taken off in pop culture, maybe could have been a little bit something bigger?
Oh, well, yeah, but I think that the entrance that I think when you talk about what fans remember, they will remember that entrance and that music. To me, it wasn't about him being a vampire. It was more just him being spooky cool, because I wasn't ever into the vampire stuff. But I just remember, you know, of course, fangs and blood in a chalice. What else is he?
Right.
Stupid ass. But, you know, he also wore the puffy shirt like on Seinfeld.
Yeah, we played that clip last week when we were talking about him, the pirate shirt.
That's great. But it's a, so yeah, he could have, if Twilight would have come out, you know, at the same time, oh my gosh, forget about it. Yeah, he would have been huge.
Right, I know you like when we give you homework assignments, so here's one for next time you come on. Think about where does Gangrel's entrance rank all time with entrances, wrestling entrances?
Okay.
We'll break that down next time you're on.
Yeah, I mean, it was groundbreaking if you think about it.
It was awesome. It was phenomenal.
Big time.
It was just the idea of being able, wait a minute, we can cut a hole in the stage? Yeah. In this graded rampway stuff. Yeah, sure. We can put an elevator in it. Yeah. Damn.
We can have fire blowing all around it.
That's a good. Yeah, that's a. Oh yeah, the Ring of Fire too. That mm-hmm. the homework assignment is a good one. I you know what? If fans want to help me, let's do this. Fans can help me on Twitter at @RealKevinKelly, and let me know like the top three. Where does Gangrel's entrance fit in entrances?
I like it.
And we'll go from there. They should be able to do that in 140 characters or less.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And of course, you got the head bob with the music, made it all come together.
All right,
so we move on to Breakdown in September. Kind of a weird...
Scott's top three, by the way, though, JR, is Triple H with DX, Triple H
the game.
With Springwater, and Triple H
with
Motorhead Live WrestleMania.
And Hunter S. Helmsley with the piano music in the
background. As an FYI, Hunter Hearst Helmsley was also Triple H.
Yes. I loved when he was with the Blue Bloods and they had that entrance. Jean-Paul LeBec.
His greatest entrance ever was with the awesome purple coat as Terra Ryzen. Okay, yes.
I wish I had
that purple coat. that was on a.
Oh, all right. Don't worry about it.
Let's go back to that. No, yes. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Breakdown.
All right, Breakdown in September. Weird mix of matches, Kevin. A lot of just random guys thrown together. A lot of these young guys. Was this a pay-per-view just to showcase some of these young talent, or was it due to the schedule? Because those weeks between SummerSlam and Breakdown, the Raws were all over the place due to the U.S. Open, so I think there's only one like actual Raw in its normal time slot. So was this looked at as just kind of a throwaway, we need to get this show out of the way to keep moving along, or was there a reason we had these weird matches with the young talent all matched up on the undercard?
What was the main event?
That was Taker, Kane, and Austin.
That was
the
triple
title.
Threat where they both double pinned him, and then Vince takes the belt and goes, "You don't have it anymore," and he gives him the fingers. He's driving off to end the show.
Oh, that was in Chicago.
No, that was in Hamilton. Judgment Day was in Chicago. Breakdown was in Canada.
I know, I was at it, but wait a minute. Wasn't that the same finish that they did in Chicago where Vince was in the wheelchair?
Yeah, that one.
Austin was the ref.
Yeah.
Oh, Austin was the referee. That's right. Vince cutting the promo.
You're fired. Yeah.
You're fired, and then they showed him
up in the skybox.
Yeah. And that's when Owen Hart was in the office on the phone when he opened the door. I don't remember that show at all.
Well, that proves the point, I guess. It was a weird show. Hang on, I want to read you the card because I'm just curious your take on it, because we talked about it a few weeks ago, and I think it's just a forgotten show. It's just kind of out there. Hang on one sec. And there's actually a match on here that was part of your homework last time. We'll see if you remember about it. I know you're exhausted, but... All right. Owen Hart defeated Edge in the opener. Al Snow and Scorpio defeated Too Much. Mark Merrow defeated Draws. Bradshaw defeated Vader. D'Lo defeated Gangrel. Rock beat Shamrock and Mankind in a cage. Val beat Dustin. DX beat Jarrett and Southern Justice. And then the main event, Kane and Taker defeated Austin.
Oh my gosh, what a horrible show.
Right? It's all over the place.
Yeah.
That's a Russo show right there. That was all his nonsense from TV.
Yep.
You know what may have changed around that time? Because there was a point where Jim Ross was booking the pay-per-view matches, you know, based around what they were doing in live events.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, so they would have, okay, here's your pay-per-view matches, and now you got to write your TV around that. But then eventually, TV should drive what's on the pay-per-view. And so if they're booking, you know, DX versus Southern Justice and Jeff Jarrett, that obviously came about as from TV. Now, I don't know if that was where it happened, because I can't imagine Jim Ross booking that live event card for a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to know when that transition actually did happen. It was sometime around then, though, because I remember Vince Russo always fighting that fight.
And it makes sense because at this time, coming off this show, is when the Raws got, I mean, these are the most memorable ones. We'll get to those in a few minutes, but the Raws were fantastic during the fall. That's when all the memorable, real crazy stuff went down. So that would make sense that started to drive the pay-per-view. So, yeah, just a weird show, and I really wonder if part of it, again, was just that they didn't have a lot of normal TV time. It was only like 3 weeks in between SummerSlam and that show, and like I said, two of them were, you know, shunted on Saturday night due to the U.S. Open. So it's just kind of an odd month.
Yeah, I remember being there, but I don't remember a second of that show. It's so weird. I remember driving away from the building because there was tremendous traffic getting out of Hamilton. Hmm. But, yes. And then Raw was in Detroit the next night, correct?
Yes. Yes. That was the
Zamboni?
The Zamboni, yep.
Got it.
Yep.
And the breaking of Vince's leg, which we'll get to. All right, Scott, go on. Next question.
Okay. What'd you think? A guy that JR and I talked about a lot throughout 1998, and it was just so disappointing because it kind of petered out a little bit at the end, was Vader. What were your thoughts on the end of his run in 98? Do you think he was used like to the best of his ability the last 18 months, or do you think he was kind of wasted?
No, he was used to the best of his ability. He was barely – he's old. He was a number one draft pick in 1970-something. He was on the Super Bowl team in 1979 for the Rams. He was an old guy.
Right.
He's just starting to break down, you know? And it's hard to be that size for all those years and do the things that he did, you know? But, and he was a bit of a baby. He was a bit of a whiny titty baby, too. For such a big bastard. He could be a little bitch. He wasn't like that with me. I just remember hearing it.
Yeah, he went to Japan after that, I guess, and then he was kind of on and off retirement for a while. I mean, I agree with you, Kevin. I think that he was used well, and Scott and I have debated this, and I thought that was the point. I mean, they missed the window with him when he first came in. That's when things got kind of screwy in 96. I thought, you know, that was his chance to be used, and I think what happened was he never really got that push that everyone expected, and everyone kept waiting for
Shawn Michaels screwed it all up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Shawn Michaels, the 86, the plan. So the plan was for Vader. And Shawn was, you know, he wasn't having it. So
we also said that Vader might have come a year too late. He might have been better suited in 95 feuding with Diesel than probably Sid was.
Yeah, I could see... I definitely could have seen good matches out of that. I also could have seen, you know, Nash probably try to kill him or those two guys fighting.
That would have been entertaining too, though.
Yes.
Yeah. That, again, that's always. I think that's good for business.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. That
it would have been better than Mabel as king and at SummerSlam. So we'll take anything, whether it's brawl.
You take it back. Absolutely. I swear I'll hang this phone up. There is nothing better than King Mabel.
Well, the key was Sir Mo, so as long as Vader had him, you would have been all set.
Yes.
Is it expert
we only knew why the batteries were being thrown. It was definitely not because of of the result of that tournament.
They kind of melted Vader's mask down into a chain.
You know, just to say things in a shocking fashion and get a laugh out of everybody, I could say this because he's dead, but Gorilla Monsoon would just make sometimes the most racist comments in the broadcast booth while we're taping like international versions of shows. And before I started, this was a famous story that was attributed to him, and he did it with me a couple of times, you know, just to bust the producer's balls, Tommy Carlucci, who's still there and a great guy.
Yep. I heard a lot of stories about Tommy. Yep.
Yeah. What a good dude. And, so anyway, he always produced Gorilla. And so he's producing the international shows. And Monsoon would just slip something in, making sure Tommy's paying attention. And Tommy, you'd hear him over the headset, "Stop." And Gorilla would go, "What'd I say? What?" You'd be like, "Come on, Gio, you can't say that." Well, I think they were doing the pitch for SummerSlam, where it was going to be Mabel versus Diesel, right? Isn't that where it was?
Yeah. Yep. Pittsburgh. Okay. Yep.
And, no, it was in Philly, right?
Philly's where he won the King of the Ring.
Philly was King of the Ring. SummerSlam was Pittsburgh.
No, I know what it was. So they're doing the recap package on the King of the Ring. Okay. Philly, for whatever reason, was the key to this story, this horrible racist story of Gorilla Monsoon. But he says, and so Mabel becomes king, and the city of Philadelphia celebrated it. There was not a chicken wing, barbecue rib, or bottle of malt liquor to be found.
What?
I swear to God. And that's what Carly, she said, stop! I really yelled, like, what are you doing?
Oh, God. Oh, God bless you, girl.
And he just, like, no-sold it, like, what, Tommy, what? Can I not say, all right, well, let's go back then. Let's just go back before. Yes, let's go back.
Oh, God, that's awesome.
How horrible.
Well, you know what's funny about that story, Kev? Just on a side note, there is a hilarious, and JR and I found this a while back, there is a hilarious stand-up Mean Gene promo. It's on YouTube. It's I think it's early 85. I think Gorilla probably wrote this promo. It's promoting a, you know, it's one of the local spots, and it's promoting a house show. I think it's Oakland, and it's, and I just want to let all our listeners know, I'm simply saying what Mean Gene said in the promo, so don't get mad at me. Gorilla goes, they're promoting a feud between the Junkyard Dog and the Iron Sheik, and Gorilla, Mean Gene goes to the Iron Sheik, you, Iron Sheik, will take on the great black wrestler, the Junkyard Dog. And at first you're like, what? It's very weird. And then all of a sudden, the Iron Sheik goes, let me tell you something, you dirty black dog. It's like, what?
Wow.
And this was like January of 85. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
Ridiculous. That was the Iron Sheik. This is before he went crazy. We're sorry, Mr. President. It was crazy.
And Monsoon saying that, you know, it was just to be shocking. And, you know, whether he had those feelings or not, I have no idea. But it was, you know, genuinely funny because he did it in a closed environment over, you know, a headset. And there was only like three people in the room. So, it, you know, that's one thing. And it was just a funny story. But something like that, that's like, that was broadcast on television.
That's crazy.
And what were they thinking? You know, did they not think that that would be, you know, offensive? Or did they think, well, because it is Oakland, and because that it would be okay?
Yes, because MC Hammer was the bat boy for the A's, yes.
Was there any truth, Kevin, did Gorilla just hate everything about the product those last few years? I mean, that's always the stories that's out there.
Well,
he just despised it.
I don't think it was that he necessarily hated it, but after Joey died, he was never the same.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, because did I ever tell you guys this, that I was related to him by marriage?
No.
No.
When I was like 8 years old, and it was such a distant relation, it was, you know, hardly a relation at all, but my great uncle married his sister-in-law.
Wow.
So it was like a second marriage for both, and my mom and dad went to the wedding, and, you know, I was a little kid, so I stayed home with the babysitter, and, you know, dad came home and he had Gorilla Monsoon autograph, so I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, but no, I started with him in 96, and I guess Joey had died 94.
Yeah.
4th of July 94.
We actually had, if you ever want to go back and listen to it, our interview with Bruno Lauer, he tells the whole story. He got really emotional. It was really overwhelming when he tells the story about it.
He
goes through the whole night.
He was in the car with him, yeah.
Everybody that, when they look back, you know, that was really the kind of the turning point for Monsoon. And you see this big, strong, you know, guy, and the way he carried himself, real, you know, kind of a renaissance man in pro wrestling, college educated, businessman, just smart, broadcaster, synonymous with the product, several generations, and, you know, the death of his son really kind of was the beginning of the end of his life. Kind of sad. But, yeah, he didn't care about much about anything. You know, he enjoyed going to Atlantic City and you know, enjoyed spending some time in the casinos and playing some cards or whatever he did. And
as Jesse said, sipping the joy juice.
Yeah.
Whatever he went down there.
He was Yeah, but it, you know, just a very nice band, very nice to the crew as well at the studio in Stamford. Like, you know, Tommy and Jill Clark, who did makeup for a long time, and John ran camera. There was a lot of people. John, what was his last name? McClure? John? John McNeil. Hey, it was, but always very nice to people. Everybody loved Gino.
20 more actions still to come.
Oh, debut a new Gorilla clip. Nice. There you go. Got to put that one aside.
All right, so the great Gorilla aside, now we move on to Al Snow, of all people, storyline. Seemed like he was in earlier in the year. He left, came back. Seemed to set up a pretty big push. He had the feud with Commissioner Slaughter where he won his spot, and from there it seemed like it kind of quickly petered out. Was there supposed to be more? I think it was in Beyond the Mat where Snow says he was promised a big run and he didn't feel like he was met on that promise. And what was the plan for Snow when he came in from ECW?
I think Vince McMahon was like, who? Who is this? This was just Vince Russo filling out the undercard. And coming up with ideas. And then finally when Vince McMahon would go, by the way, what are we doing on the undercard? Well, you know, we've been running with these angles over the last few weeks, Vince. You should know what we're doing in the undercard. But regardless, you know, Al Snow and they're doing this job squad thing, and what? What is that? I could see it being something like that. Yeah. Who knows?
He was over, though. I mean, well, he was over big time in ECW, but those first couple months, I was at a Raw in Lowell right after SummerSlam, and I remember the crowd was going nuts when he came out, and they passed out the heads and all that stuff.
But south of North Carolina, let's say.
Yep.
Al Snow did not get a thunderous ovation.
No, it's too bad.
Yeah,
in ECW
sure.
towns, yeah, sure. But, you know, took a little while, but I think he found his role. He was a nice, likable mid-card guy. So I don't know what big push he was expecting or hoping for. But if they had promised him something, told him this or that, hey, plans change. Hey, listen, I talked a lot with Al. You know, and he was very, very frustrated for a long, long time. And I think he felt better when he came back from ECW because he felt like he had something, you know.
Right.
Like he had finally found something that would work. But, at the end of the day, he did well. You know, he did really well. So, that was it.
Surprised he never tried something with having a guy just wrestle in the areas where he's hot. Like, only have him when they're in the Northeast or areas where they thought he would be over and don't even bother having him on in the South.
Well, I think, you know, there might be some logic in that. But again, you know, you think it's a national company, national show. That's how they promote. But I could see that. I know we do some of that with Ring of Honor. And not that we don't bring some guys in. It's more of a, you know, more of an expense thing because Ring of Honor is a much smaller company.
Right.
But we'll put some local, you know, regional guys on because they might be known. You know, that's where BJ Whitmer returned over a year ago. You know, he got a proving ground match against then television champion Jay Lethal in his hometown of Cincinnati. And it made sense. Why not? Let's put BJ on the card. He wants to get back in the ring. He wants to do it. All right, let's see what he's got. So, you know, it's like playing on your home court. But, yeah, that makes sense. But really, how many guys do you have? Then you wind up with some part-timers and you know, some guys that's like, oh, well, how are we going to push him in this and not in that? And, wait, now we're doing TV in the Northeast, and who's this guy? Maybe what you do is you use those towns to get him over on TV because he's going to get a good reaction, so you educate your audience. But, so, anyway, enough about that.
What do you think about the angle involving Dan Severn, Owen Hart, the whole, you know, I'm retiring from the ring? What was the plan behind that?
I don't know. I think with a lot of Russo ideas, there was a good thought in the beginning. And maybe then some good thought in the middle. But I'm not so sure there's ever really a payoff. That said, I don't know if there was a payoff to be with this. And sometimes if there was an idea for a payoff, it could be agreed upon, and then Vince McMahon might change his mind on that payoff. And, you know, just end it. okay, how long is this going to go on for? End it. And that's that.
I thought Owen was good at the role.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was kind of creative because it was sort of, you know, kind of real.
Right.
But he was such a, you know, he was Owen. So there was always that, oh, this reeks of BS, you know.
I love the one where, they're doing the thing of the Blue Blazer. And he has Steve Blackman in the sleeper, and Owen comes and just kicks him in the balls. And then when the referees come, he yells how he's retired and he's not part of the company, and he storms off. I just always made me laugh.
Yeah.
That was what he said, because I guess he was still retired, went into the wheelchair.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. I opened the door, he's on the phone. I'm sorry, I'm retired. That's Owen.
Oh, yep. Vince in the wheelchair. We got to get there. I think it's coming up here on our list.
Yes.
Some of my favorites. And yeah, actually, it kind of leads into that. So, memories over the Raws in the fall. Do you agree those are some of the best of all time? Of course, you had the hospital with Mr. Sacco in the bedpan. You had Bang 316, the Zamboni, Vince in the wheelchair, Big Boss Man comes back, just all that stuff. You know, what were some of your favorite moments, and do you think those are maybe the best stretch of Raws ever?
Yeah, very good stretch. Lee, that was a real, real good creative time because it led to Survivor Series.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, in my opinion, the best pay-per-view of the best non-WrestleMania of the Attitude Era. One of the best non-WrestleManias of all time. But all those pieces were getting into place throughout September, October, and into November, and it was a real good time, very exciting time. How do we top this? Was always kind of the thing.
What do you think was the better moment? The bedpan, the Bang 316 with the pissing of the pants, or Mr. Sacco? And money and future, you know, aside, just in the moment, if you had to watch one of those, you know, what's the best one?
The bedpan.
Right?
I agree.
I
agree.
Yeah. The setup and the whole deal, Vince in the hospital with the, you know, then just everything. Yeah, Mr. Sacco. Oh, my gosh.
Vince was just a force during those 3 months. He's always great, but those 3 months, even the promos, they're just amazing. I've been rewatching those because I hadn't seen him probably since they aired originally, so I wanted to go back and rewatch him. And I was watching the hospital one a few weeks ago. My wife was kind of putzing around the house while I was watching it, and she stopped cold on the hospital scene. She's remembered that from, you know, other compilations, and she just dies laughing with the bedpan too. So I think that this is a moment that lives on, fans
right.
and non-fans and casual fans alike. Always remember that, the thud.
There was a Raw, I guess, from Nassau Coliseum,
mm-hmm.
I think it was, right before, with Vince in the wheelchair.
Yep.
And it was the go-home week of the pay-per-view, and he basically tells Steve Austin, do the right thing, do the wrong thing, you know, basically telling him that if he doesn't count three, he's fired. It was the best wrestling promo ever.
I yep. back you up 100%. I just rewatched it, and it was amazing.
Yep. I never said anything to Vince. Like, oh, wow, that was great. But that one, I went up to him, and I just had to compliment him. You know, because he would come back through, and it was always like, you know, well, I think that worked, you know, or something like that, something. But as he came back through, Vince, that was the best promo that I've ever heard in my entire life. That absolutely killed. You nailed it. You know,
yep.
He was like, thank you. But, yeah, I just had to say something, and I don't care if I look like a big mark in front of the boss.
Yeah, that with stuff like that, it's worth it. I mean, that was just iconic.
Just stood there, and with the way the light was on him.
Yep.
Because, right, he was on the stage.
Yep.
And the
yep.
red light, like, caught, the, you know, kind of the profile of his face, and he just didn't miss a syllable.
Nope.
Every word, perfect. Perfect.
It was amazing.
Yep.
And that was the same night that the convertible got cemented.
That was the payoff at the end of the night, right?
Yep. Yeah, great. I mean, those Raws, again, and Vince, it was just locked in during this time, and I love the unveiling of the Boss Man. That was great. Comes back in the mask, looking in good shape, so I was always a big Boss Man fan growing up, so I remember freaking out when he returned.
Right.
Yeah, it was great. The whole corporation being formed, I thought that was fantastic, and that kind of leads to our next question, Scott.
Yes. A guy who had a pretty good first half, but might have been kind of losing steam a little bit, definitely had a change for the better in his personality, if you will, and that was Ken Shamrock, who had a mega heel push. He pretty much became a cyborg and just started killing guys, and of course would eventually become the Intercontinental Champion. He won the tournament that, of course, was created when Triple H had to vacate it due to the injury.
And that was that night in Nassau as well.
Yep, that was the Nassau night as well. Did you like the new heel, Shamrock? Did you like the change in character? And what were your thoughts on the tournament for the IC title?
I really don't have great recollection about that. Isn't that funny? I thought he had kind of peaked, you know? I don't know what it was.
In general or in that role?
In general.
Okay.
Oh.
Because when he started, the cupboard was bare. But then as more and more guys came in and got over and felt fresh and new and different, and he started to slide down the card, you know? The thing with Severn never materialized. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether maybe it was just because there was always the belief that he was a little bit wooden in, you know, promos. Just never could connect to him emotionally the way, you know, you could with somebody else. And there was always something very shady about him, you know? I don't know whether it was just or not, but there was something that was just kind of shady about Ken Shamrock.
Really?
Yeah, I liked him. I didn't dislike him, but I just was always like, you know, he seemed like kind of a dark dude.
Hmm.
You know? I know he had a crummy childhood.
Right, yeah, he had a messed up past.
But, yeah, there just wasn't anything about that time with him that I really remember as being like standout. I just remember it being like, you know, I remember everybody hates tournaments on TV, WWE, you know.
I love that one.
The matches don't get enough time. You know, we're crowning a new Intercontinental Champion. The title doesn't mean anything. To me, it was sort of just like, eh.
Well, his renaissance is kind of short-lived. It's only like a few months, but for that fall time, he was just, I don't know, I think he just found his niche as just a guy who doesn't talk and just goes out and beats the piss out of people.
Well, who were some of the people that he was wrestling, and who was he being this cyborg against? Because I really don't remember that.
Well, the night of the tournament, he beat let me pull it up. I know in the finals he beat X-Pac, and he just mowed through him in the last match. And then I think he beat Val, maybe? Hang on one sec, let me pull it up. On the pay-per-view after that, Judgment Day, he fought Foley, and that's where Foley made himself tap out. He put the sock in his own mouth while he was in the ankle lock. Shamrock defeated Steve Blackman by submission, then he defeated Val by submission, and then X-Pac by submission, all under 5 minutes. He ran through them in the tournament.
So three less than 5 minute matches to crown a new Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Raw in October 98, so.
Is there any wonder why I don't remember it?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, it's fresh in my mind because I watched it recently, but he,
right.
The way they presented him was just as a guy that dominates tournaments, which I thought led cool, you know, nicely into Survivor Series, actually. A guy that dominates tournaments and just, you know, doesn't care about anything except winning this tournament and winning the belt. I just thought it was well presented.
Yes.
This is really obscure, but I always thought it was a really cool idea at the time because it was rumored heavily that there's going to be some kind of, like, shooter group. It was going to be Shamrock, Severn, Blackman, Regal when he was around. Was there anything to that, or was that just one of those internet legends that was out there?
Makes sense. I think that Regal's thing at that time was he was not in a good way, right? So
right, yeah, he was briefly there.
Yeah, and if he was like the conduit of the group, let's say.
Yep.
And we'll put Regal with him. When Regal came in all messed up, that would have killed any idea that was surrounding him. You know, the man's man thing was bad enough.
Yes. Except for the theme music.
Which is still, I can hear in my head as I sit here. But I do seem to remember hearing something about that.
I mean, it made sense that they're all there, and I feel like Dr. Death was rumored at one point, too, to be part of that, but I think it was mainly Blackman, Shamrock, Severin, Regal, I think. Anyway, would have been pretty cool. I mean, they would have been nowhere, but it would have been cool.
If it would have been, if it wasn't Vince Russo's idea, then it would have gone nowhere.
Right, exactly.
We'll put leprechaun hats on them. We'll make them the Irish Assassins or something like that, you know, something stupid.
All right, well, speaking of weird angles, LOD at this time, really kind of a mess. Draws is with them. Hawk's drinking and pilled up on the apron, puking in his helmet. What was the end game of this whole thing? Is there any truth to the rumor that Draws was going to be in a drug pusher that was doping up Hawk so he could take his spot? Of course, we have the whole thing where he throws him off the Titantron, and Vic Grimes was supposed to be involved. Is anything to all that?
I think yes. I think the Draws being the enabler was a big part of that. Don't know why it never paid off. Maybe because it was a horrible idea.
I agree.
And that, I mean, that's a touchy angle to do. You're basically saying this guy's a drug pusher and he's doping this guy up so he can take his spot. It's kind of
right.
Kind of ballsy.
Well, yeah. And again, it was how do we push the envelope?
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't like doing it with the LOD.
Me neither.
Anybody else you could do it with, just not them, you know?
Well, I mean, were they supposed to just get the win in the end? Were they supposed to, Hawk gets clean and they beat the shit out of Draws and Grimes and get their redemption, I guess?
Well, yeah. What was the payoff with Jake the Snake Roberts going to be? You know, with him drinking with Jerry Lawler, you know? I never know how, you know, you tap into some real life thing and it just never seems, I think it was always Vince McMahon's way of exposing weakness. But again, you know, without weakness, without vulnerability, you know, what are we? You know, everybody's got to have some weak point, except for Vince, who has none. He has full control of his physical, mental faculties at all times. You know, hates to sneeze. So, yeah, who knows? I don't know what the end game, the payoff was. I know that they wound up doing that thing with Vic Grimes where he was, like, all in white.
Yeah.
Was that later?
I think it was around this time, and he was out there during Draws matches. So I feel like they were kind of kicking it off. Let's see. Well, early in
the idea was that, okay, he's going to be this big cocaine dealer, right?
Yeah.
They were going to call him Mr. White. And he had to dye his hair white, like bleach it white. Hmm. And I was like, Vince Russo, do you realize how difficult that's going to be to maintain? Well, you can just do it. Okay.
Yeah, right on.
He
don't care at all for the human beings involved.
He popped back up in the summer of 99 under the name Key, and he tagged with Draws and Albert. So I don't know if that was where he ended up showing up again.
Yeah, the Mr. White name changed to Key, as in Kilo, get it?
Ha!
Yes, terrible.
Test, as in testosterone, get it?
And passing the test.
As in too much of it. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it says right here, Grimes was moved to Memphis before being brought up to TV under the name Key. He made his televised debut July 26, 99. Had a short-lived drug dealer character along with Draws and Prince Albert. And then Godfather got hurt and they canned it.
Yeah, feuded with Godfather.
The pimp and the drug dealer.
Well, there was a feud, the pimp versus the drug dealer.
Right.
Yes, women are a better vice
than Godzilla
drugs.
Like Godzilla versus Mothra.
Yeah.
Only worse.
Well, don't forget, Godfather was legit, man. He just, this women he wanted to have fun with. That's it.
All right. Moving on.
Well, they were on UPN anyway. That's what it was.
I know.
All right. One of the biggest upsets that occurred on pay-per-view at the end of 98 was when Mark Henry stunned the burgeoning babyface Rock at Judgment Day in Chicago.
UPN. Jeez, that's old.
I know, it is old. What was the plans for Mark Henry? And why... why that upset when Rock was on such a roll, you know, as a growing babyface?
I don't know. I never saw anything in Mark Henry. Nice guy. Very nice. You know, just wonderful gentleman. But just to me, I just never got it. And I think it was just always that they had invested so much in him. They were always trying to get a return on that investment. And Rock and Mark got along, so I'm sure it wasn't a problem for him. But I bet in hindsight, he'd probably be like, you know, yeah, maybe he shouldn't have done that. But I don't think it hurt anything. It didn't hurt him. But ultimately, it didn't help Mark Henry.
Right, because they didn't really go anywhere with
him. Billy Kidman beat Hulk Hogan. But Hulk Hogan was still Hulk Hogan, and Billy Kidman was still Billy Kidman. That wasn't going to change anything.
Right.
So, well, especially when Hogan's, you know, he puts him over in one match with a bunch of gimmicks, and the rest of the time he's, you know, ripping the shit out of him in every promo possible and can't draw and all this other stuff. It's obviously not going to go anywhere.
Well, but again, so what was the upside of Mark Henry beating
Oh, none.
Rock?
Yeah, no, none. Yeah. I was just bitching about the Kidman thing.
But he's Billy Kidman. He's still Billy Kidman.
You can't powerbomb him.
That wasn't going to happen.
Well, that was the joke. Anyway,
yeah.
Can't powerbomb right. Kidman. Anyway.
Anyway.
What did you think of the vacating of the title leading to Survivor Series, Kev? Did you like that? Or Scott's not a big fan of vacated titles, as he's told me in the past. How did you feel?
It didn't bother me because they had a great plan for the Survivor Series tournament. And the payoff was so good that it allowed you to look past everything and allowed you to, you know, have somebody there without necessarily having to beat them. But having so many contenders as you get into this tournament. So,
did you think it was Did you think it was a surprise to take the title off Austin as quickly as they did? It seemed like they built so long to him finally winning. And I'm not saying I disagree with the move. I'm just curious, did you think it kind of was surprising that they took it off him that quickly?
No, because they wanted to get it on Rock so that they could get it to Mania, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that Steve could beat him, right?
Yes.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened. It just seemed like it was a fine plan. I'm just saying, you know, watching it in real time at the time, it just was surprising that this guy's supposed to be the leader of the company, and then they take the belt right back off him. You know, like 5 months after he won it. But
well, how did they do it though?
Oh no, they screwed the shit out of him. Yeah, of
course. So that's kind of good. That made you hate.
Of course.
Vince McMahon even more, and then when he formed the corporation, he finally got the corporate champion that he wanted.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, it was well done, and that's why I think the vacating...
Go back and watch the Raw after Survivor Series from the Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, and the first segment is Vince McMahon introducing the new world champion, The Rock, and the heat, the absolute nuclear heat that The Rock had, that McMahon had that night, was unbelievable. One of the best segments ever. And in terms of heat. Mm-hmm. And that place was jam freaking packed. There was like 22,000 people in there. Because Rupp's a big building to begin with, and it was either sold out or damn close. There was over 20, I know that night.
Mm. Yeah, because of that leads us to the next question.
Well, actually, just before that, too, and just to wrap vacating part, I think it worked so well because Vince was such a strong heel character that it didn't matter because he obviously had screwed Austin, and I think it displayed into the story very well. So that's it.
I concur. We have a question about that kind of leads to that in a minute, but before that, Kev... we talked earlier about you and Shane when you were working on Heat together, but it was about this time that Shane actually started becoming an on-air character. Yes, he did commentary with you, but it was about this time he actually legitimately became an on-air character. He re-signed Austin to the deal. It was the whole big setup. You think it was a good move to have Shane into the on-air fold?
Yeah, I did. My whole thing was I've always been a big soap opera guy. And there's always the son, the brother... You know, the stepmother, the evil grandmother, you know, the controlling matriarch, whatever. Wrestling always did well when there were family ties. You know, the Andersons and their cousin, Ric Flair. You know, they always found ways to relate people. And so having real relations and telling the real story of the real McMahon family, you know, playing off of that, you know, the feel of like a, you know, Dynasty or Dallas or something like that, those nighttime soaps, you know, a few years before, or, you know, any of the soap operas of the time. I think that's always a classic theme that you can never go wrong with in wrestling. Wrestling is, to me, it's comfort food. It, when you screw with the formula, it doesn't work. You can try to change it, but the simple things like family, emotions, good versus evil always works. And, you know, there was, for all the nonsense about the shades of gray, there wasn't a lot of shade of gray in this time period. The bad guys were bad and the good guys were good. The good guys had to do bad things to get back, but man, those bad guys did anything they could to think about, you know, getting back. And so, yeah, having Shane involved, having the family involved, it was fine.
And talking about, you know, great Vince promos, that one where Shane reveals himself along with Austin, Vince was fantastic in that one too, where he realizes that Shane's, you know, turned his back on the family and helped out Austin and everything.
Right, and, you know, think about all the Mafia movies, everything like that. I think that was sort of one of the themes, you know, and go figure Vince Russo really being into something like that, you know. But anyway, yeah, the because he was a wannabe tough guy Italian. And so, just any of that stuff where you talk about family and you talk about, you know, you turned your back on the family. Wow, heavy.
Particularly the McMahon family.
And now look at him. He's out.
That's it. He's gone. It's all because of that night.
You see that recent picture of him?
With the all gray?
Oh, wow.
I didn't see this picture. Where was this?
I saw it online. He had it backstage. Who was he with?
It was Vince and... Damn it. Someone like
Who was
Rand.
In the middle of the two of them?
Oh, man.
Was it an athlete?
It wasn't Flair, was it? No. I'll try and find it.
But yeah, Shade's hair, you know, he always had kind of the salt and pepper thing going when he was in his early 30s. You know, but now he's like his grandfather. Ghost white.
All right, I'm going to look for that, but as we move along, Kev, the Rock now, heading into Survivor Series, was the face turn that they kind of did always the plan and then to radically turn him back heel? Or did the decision to go heel come after because he was getting so over as a face? Like what was the plan? Were they shocked at how over he got coming off of SummerSlam? And was he always the choice for the corporate champion, too?
Yes, he was always the choice. I don't know where the surprise came from or the realization that he was really getting over. I think it was just the, you know, kind of that it was a blend, because what he was doing and saying was heat getting and great, but the crowd turned him, because that was the time frame where he would basically, you know, the fans would call themselves, you know, where he would insult the fans horribly and they would cheer radically. You know, it was like, you pieces of monkey crap or whatever he would say, and it was just like, you realize you're being insulted. But they loved it. So as he continued to get over, it was like, well, this will work really good when we turn him.
I just found the picture. I just found the picture you were talking about. It's, I don't know who that is.
It's just some random guy, like a backstage guy or something.
Yeah, it looks like a guy that works for the Knicks or something. I don't know. It looked like a Knick logo on the, but wow, look at his hair. It's not even, forget it, it's gray. It's like all disheveled. I don't know. Very, very strange. Like, oh, Shane, you've fallen on hard times, but I don't know. It's wow. He definitely got his dad's.
You think he'll ever come back, Kevin?
Nope.
Really?
Nope. Oh, I mean, would he ever come back, like be on TV?
Either on TV or just back to the company and work backstage.
No,
again.
He'll never come back to the company. And yes, I could see him coming back to TV.
Okay. Wow. So that's the opposite of I would expect.
Yeah, there was a winner and a loser in that family. The winner was Stephanie. The loser, Shane.
You think, I mean, honestly, who do you think would do a better job in the long term? Not just Stephanie, but Stephanie with the Triple H package or Shane?
Stephanie with Triple H.
Yeah.
Actually, to be honest with you, Kevin, Triple H is the winner and everybody else is the loser.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised that you feel that way?
He wishes it was Triple H and Scott Criscolo running the company.
Oh,
beat
God.
On Glenn Beck every week.
Mr. and Mrs. Triple H.
The Criscolo Helmsley.
Mr. and Mrs. Triple H Criscolo.
The Criscolo Helmsley faction. Is it?
Helmsley faction.
Oh, good God. All right.
Scott could be a great women's champion like Stephanie was. And
that's right.
Tuesday night in Texas with Triple H and Scott. Yes, I know. You're rebooking history. You love it.
Tonight in Texas.
Could have had a great feud with the Warlord.
You've already kind of mentioned this. You already kind of mentioned this, Kev, so we won't go on with it. But your thoughts, you love the Deadly Games tournament. And again, in terms of best single night of booking, in pay-per-view history, you obviously think very highly of that Survivor Series show.
Yeah, as far as a pay-per-view being a story,
yep,
beginning, middle, and an end, that there is none better.
Amazing.
You know, better matches, better moments, better highlights, but in terms of an episodic 3-hour pay-per-view, that's it. That's it right there.
That one, I was always upset. I didn't see it live. I mean, it was still great to watch afterwards, but I wish I could have seen it all unfold.
There was one funny story, which I might have shared with you guys before. Boss Man wasn't there for his cue when he was supposed to whack Austin with the chair.
So that's true then.
Yeah, that's true.
And so Briscoe had to hit him, and he hit him like so lightly.
Yeah, it was brutal.
They just said, like in the production meeting, they're laughing about it, you know, at any chance they could to rip Briscoe. They referred to him as Tink. Because that was the sound that, you know, the chair made when it hit Austin.
It seemed to be a couple weird cues on that show. There was the other one, too, where the X-Pac and Regal match ends, like, in a time limit. And then they cut to Vince, and he's, like, restart the match. And Patterson and Slaughter just kind of amble out, and everyone just stands around, and they all leave. It was very weird.
And I think that was done because then didn't they do like some kind of follow-up? They were going to do follow-up on TV or something like that. I can't remember that exactly, but you know, that was, or did somebody get hurt? I can't remember.
Yeah. The X-Pac may have been hurt because I remember holding his neck after.
Yeah. We talked about that. Yeah. There was a chance that he was probably injured.
Right. I think, now that I think back, I don't think he was badly hurt, because there was I certainly would have remembered that, but I don't think that was it.
It was just really
but
awkward.
I can't remember.
So the first match of that show has the return of the great Dwayne Gill, of course, all part of the story, which makes sense. But was there ever anyone considered for that mystery slot, or was it always just a spot to put Gill in to make it a soft run for Mankind in the beginning?
I don't know when they probably, I think that it was probably just a name that Russo had remembered that always tickled him. So yeah, we got to get Dwayne Gill for that spot, you know, and then sure enough they did.
Because I remember at the time, of course, on the internet, Shawn Michaels was the big name, and I think they even chant HBK in the arena before Gill comes out, and then, of course, the always rumored Randy Savage, whenever there's a mystery slot, he was rumored there at the time, too, and it's funny because he actually returned on Nitro on the big January 4th one. He had been off TV, and rumor his contract was up, so I think it was another one, like in 96, where everyone thought maybe he was coming back.
Right. No, it was just the red herring, as it were.
Mm. A great one. Paid off
well.
Yeah.
Speaking of Shawn Michaels, he obviously would end up turning heel quickly, shortly after the Get Deadly Games tournament, and would join the corporation. Did you think that was well done? Do you think it was smart to turn Shawn heel? What did you think of that?
I'm trying to think of why that was done.
They did it where he bashed X-Pac with a chair. And then Vince gave him all the power, the superpower as commissioner.
Yeah, I think maybe it was just give Shawn something to do. And not that Vince ever wanted to make sure that he got a return on his investment. but I think he always wanted to, you know, because he had said, you know, because they were like, you know, we're paying Sean a lot of money and he's not really doing anything. He's like, I would, you know, for everything Shawn Michaels has given to this company, I would pay him just to stay home. So, but I think there was just always, you know, what if we could do this? What if we could do that? And, I don't, good or bad, you know, coming back heel, baby, to me, that doesn't matter. Mm. It's just the reasons why he did what they wanted to do with him to have him come back. You know, I think there was a hope that they could somehow get him back in the ring or whatever, just because he was so good, you know.
I wonder if part of it, too, was just to give Vince a strong foil, because the heel thing only lasts, like, 3 weeks, and then he goes back to being, you know, face and helping Austin, and they play up the whole thing where he has absolute power because Vince gave it to him. So maybe it was just a setup to get him, to get someone to combat Vince power-wise backstage, maybe, or, you know.
All right, there you go.
Something like that.
Makes sense to me.
Mm. Now, I've been looking forward to this question.
But go ahead.
No. Well, not really, but of course, Kev, the sad events at the end of the year. JR had to come off camera. Not this JR, the other JR. Good old JR had to come off camera. He was overseas. I think it was during that stretch where they had the British, the UK pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And his Bell's palsy came back. And he was off camera. Number one, what were your thoughts on that? But what were things like when that happened, when you found out about that? Number two, rock bottom. We'll talk about the pay-per-view as a whole, but Michael Cole sits in the seat with Jerry. And clearly, at least in my opinion, and I know JR agrees with me, I don't see why you didn't have that slot. You were already doing TV. So part one, what were your thoughts when you heard about JR's, what happened to JR? Number two, why Cole and not you?
I remember when the first thing that we worried about with JR was that he had had a stroke.
Ooh.
Because I did not go overseas on that tour, but I remember just like hearing about it, and you know, it was either Bell's palsy or it was a stroke. I just remember it being like, and my father had had a stroke when I was, 11 years old, and that just kind of like that scared me, you know, because I remember what I went through, you know, what my dad went through, and how painful that was for him, and so yeah, that was just something that caught my ear. And when I heard it was Bell's palsy, he was coming, that had come back, I was like, all right, well, he can recover from that. You know, he can come back, and it's just going to take time to recede and relax or whatever, the inflammation, the infection, that nerve to go away, and then he can come back. You know, just, and the reason why Cole and not me is because Kevin Dunn liked Michael Cole and never liked me. Never wanted me there. It was not his choice, so it was easy for him.
You think you deserve the slot?
Do I think I deserved it over Michael Cole?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
We agree.
That was the best live heat that we ever did, because Jim Ross did produce us.
Oh.
Was it that one? Was that Rock Bottom?
It must have been, yeah, because it happened like the week before JR and Cole.
No,
took that
no, no, no. It was Survivor Series.
Okay.
Survivor Series was the best live heat because JR produced us.
Yeah, and he was still around.
In commentary? Wow. Wow, what a difference.
Mm.
As opposed to having McMahon there? Holy mackerel. Yes. But I remember that Rock Bottom one. That was when Draws got lacerated, right, by Triple H's knee brace?
Yes, yeah, they fought that night. Yep.
Yeah, on that live heat. Man, there was a lot of heat in that crowd. There was a lot of I was doing the Slam Jam segments, you know, the ticket selling segments.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So tickets go on sale for Vancouver for Rock Bottom. Mm-hmm. And they're a virtual sellout one day. But we're 6 weeks out. So for 6 weeks, I tell the people every week, if you want to go to the box office the morning of the show. There might be some production seats. There might be some seats that are opened up for production. you know, you go to the box office, whenever it opens, 10 a.m., whatever I said, blah, blah, blah. So I get there for the production meeting, right? And I see this long-ass line of people waiting at the box office in the early morning, and they were all like, Kevin, you told us to be here, you told us to be here, hey! I was like, oh my gosh.
What's that all about?
No, stupid Canucks, go back home. No seats for you. No, but it was just like, you know, the power of television. These people had heard what I had told them and whatever. But and you know what? Not that Cole did a bad job or Cole was not deserving of it.
He was not ready at that time.
No,
no, of course he wasn't. But it's not as if he was a bad guy.
No.
But again, if there's a winner and there's a loser, somebody's got to be better than somebody else. And I was better than him.
And I think it did a lot of damage to him long term, because I think people remembered that, you know, 4 month or 3 month stretch that he did every Raw on those pay per views, and you know, they weren't great. And I think that hindered him later on when they tried to make him again, you know, a lead commentator when SmackDown started and everything else. I think that held him back a little bit in the fans' eyes.
I think that's fair, because he's the guy who replaces Jim Ross,
and the guy who said the stairs weigh 10,000 pounds, whatever the tombstone weighs, you know.
3 tons or something, yeah, exactly.
But that's Vince Russo.
Right.
Stirring the pot. So.
Any idea why they didn't go back to Canada for a while? They were there so many times from like 96 through this time, and then this is the last show in Canada for a while. Any idea why they just stopped going back up there? It seemed like it was such a home for them for a while.
What was unique about the schedule after that? I don't know. Could have had something to do with taxes, could have had something to do with, you know, some business decision.
I said that it had something to do with Brett and a lack of.
Yeah, because then you get the We Want Brett chance and You Screwed Brett.
Yeah, because this is the last time, Rock Bottom was the last time they were in Canada till WrestleMania 18.
Right.
And they were there so much for between Raw and pay-per-view in 96 through 98. They were there a ton. I mean, just here, at the end of 98, yeah, two out of the last four were there.
Yeah, two out of the last four there in Canada.
Right.
But then after this, they don't go back until... Now, they do a couple of big Raw. Remember, they did that Raw at Skydome.
Yeah.
Right before the massacre, I think. But after that, I mean, I don't even think they do Raws. I mean, I'm sure you guys went up there for Raw at some point during the main stretch of Attitude. But yeah, this is the last pay-per-view for, Jesus, over 3 years.
Right.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know why, because I think the Canada office was still going strong then. Carl DeMarco and his team did a really good job. Mm. But yeah, I don't know why, what changed. I mean, maybe it was the fact that we didn't have to, you know, we didn't have to worry about selling tickets.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a big part of 97, why they were up there. They were just hot up there with Brett and Cool probably in the U.S. a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we were running, you know, Lowell, and we wouldn't have been able to sell out. We, you know, we started going like Gundarena more and different buildings like that that were, you know, sold out. So, makes sense. Maybe that was one of the reasons.
Hey, while we're in Vancouver, any thoughts on that final pay-per-view in 98, the Buried Alive match? Was everyone disappointed in that one? It seemed like they gave him a lot of time, and both guys were just dinged up and didn't really seem to mesh as well as they did back at SummerSlam.
Yeah, no one liked it. That was Taker Austin, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was the one where they wanted to kill Vince Russo. They hated him. They hated the idea of doing it. They didn't want to do it. And it suffered.
Yeah, you could tell. You could tell they're not there in that match.
Right.
What did you think of the build, the embalming and throwing Paul Bearer in the sewer, and then of course the symbol, which raised the ire of many internet pundits at the time. I remember reading, shaking my head at all the people that were calling them out over that.
I was there.
Oh God, I got in a pissing contest with Bob Ryder.
Yes, Bob Ryder. He hated it.
Yeah, he hated it. Yep, I remember that.
Whatever.
I was there. I thought it was awesome.
Oh yeah,
it was a New Haven.
I thought it was great. You know, I always hated that trying to walk it back thing, though. it's not a cross, it's a symbol.
Right.
You know?
Right. If you're going to do it, go all out.
Right. Screw you. It's a cross. Instead, you kill your own credibility when you say it's a symbol. But yeah, that was badass. I thought that was awesome.
Man, I think Ryder wrote like a 17-page article on One Wrestling about that friggin' thing.
Yeah.
He did not let that go for a long time.
I told him to go shit in his hat more than once. He aggravated me to no end. You know?
He would be replaced. Bob Ryder. Throughout the Attitude Era, Bob Ryder would be replaced by Phil Mushnick, who I just wanted to absolutely punch in the face.
Exactly.
After a while. I fucking hate that guy. He's elitist TV shit columns. He used to piss me off to no end.
Right.
Stop watching if you hate it so much. You're not going to make anybody else stop watching, so get the fuck over it. You know?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, Ryder was just a WCW shill.
Yep.
With no discernible talent. And never quite saw what his role and everything was. So,
I mean, that was the main website at the time. I remember the One Wrestling, him and Cher.
Oh, yeah. But I always loved Dave Shearer and Mike Johnson.
The Lariat. The Weekly
Jeff
Lariat.
McGrath. I loved all those guys. I still do. I think they're awesome. But Bob, if he was on fire, I wouldn't piss on him to put him out.
Cher had I think it was the Daily Lariat, the Weekly Lariat. I remember it was like 9 pages after on Tuesdays after Raw Nitro. He'd recap each show and do all the news. And that was my work study reading when I was sitting
that
there.
That story about
center.
How TNA was formed with Jarrett and you know, the Jarretts on Bob Ryder's boat. I wish they would have thrown Ryder overboard.
Is he still there with them? I think he is.
Who knows and who cares?
Hmm.
Unfortunately, Mushnick still writes, but he doesn't talk about wrestling anymore, thank God.
Good.
Another guy wanted to. He was just so annoying.
You should have fought with him and Glenn Beck.
Damn you, Mushnick.
All right, Kev. Who was the undercard MVP of the year, 98? And we know Austin on top and Vince were the big ones, but how about the mid card? Who was the guy that, you know, couldn't have done without?
Wow. Damn, there was so many guys. That was the other thing. That was the roster was so full. Come on, give me some names here. Help me out.
Skull, A Ball. No.
Gang Wars?
Yeah. Well, you love the Gang Wars. We know that. Rock, Shamrock, I guess would be two of them. Owen, although he was kind of up and down.
Val
came in kind of late. Triple H, D-Lo, X-Pac.
X-Pac had a good year.
D-Lo had a good year.
Not really. How about Mankind? Well, he was kind of a main eventer for most of it, though.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, some of the new guys, you know, the Edge, the Christians, but I don't remember them being, like, super standout stellar. Gangrel had a pretty good year.
Taka started well, and then he faded.
Who?
Taka.
Taka Michinoku.
Yeah, he was hot and then faded off.
Well, they made a big deal out of the light heavyweight title in the beginning, and then, as it would be throughout most of the Attitude Era, in the Vince Russo years, they'd be like, all right, this is boring. I don't feel like doing this anymore.
Exactly.
That's what it seemed like, anyway.
Yeah, we were talking about that, they should have made Kaientai go for the title and take it back to Japan or something crazy. Like, they feuded, but they didn't seem to give a shit about the title.
Because belts don't matter.
Yeah. No.
They're a prop.
He doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, really, as much grief as I give him, the mid-card MVP of that year has to be Vince Russo. Because, I'll tell you why.
Hmm.
As ADD as he was given a lot of young guys and came up with some really good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them were great. The Brood, Val Venus, and that's pretty good stuff, you know? And they all weren't home runs, but that I thought was probably like the strongest like mid-card class that those guys got over quick, and then they were able to kind of help, you know, be the bridge between segments 1, 6, and 10, you know, 11. And the rest of the Raws going forward. And so, yeah, I mean, I just, kind of a guy. I remember Bob Holly having a lot of real good matches.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my boy, Mark Merrow in his douchebag heel role.
Yeah, well, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I love that
stuff. That was different.
He's such an ass.
So, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe Shamrock, maybe, but there was a lot of, you know, the leap from the gang wars all the way to this now. There was a lot of guys and a lot of guys to get over, so. Very fun.
Mm. All right. The year is over. How do you think the company felt? How did you guys feel as 1998 ended? I mean, it's been 1 year since Montreal and all the uncertainty. How did you feel 1 year later? Did you feel that you had finally kind of started kicking dirt in WCW's face, or did you still think that the war was pretty even when the year ended?
No, pretty much riding high.
Pretty I agree.
Much feeling like everything that was, you know, the culmination of the year, wrapping up the year in, and what was the main event at Rock Bottom again?
It was the Buried Alive.
That was the Buried Alive match.
Yeah. The last match of that year on pay-per-view, not good. But where they were going with everything through the year, again, it was more about the television and less about the pay-per-view, and everybody felt really strongly heading towards Rumble and then Mania. And they turned out to be pretty right.
Hmm. So you don't think that they were... There weren't any worries anymore about ratings or anything like that. It was all full steam ahead now.
Yeah, it was more like, well, how high could we go? Because by May of 99, that pretty much was the peak of the peak, right?
Yep.
Wasn't that the biggest episode?
Yep, May 10th.
Right, in Orlando, the day after my birthday. And I think I wrote the Informer column about that night. And I had a picture taken, because I think Albert and Crash Holly and Val and somebody else were just laying out, sitting out in chairs during the day. Just
yes, yeah, so I remember that picture in the magazine, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just, everybody was so relaxed. And it was such a great atmosphere and such a great locker room. And the war was over, and we had slaughtered and you know, surrender. It was time to surrender. But, yeah, looking back on the whole year, it was pretty damn good. And I think it was that year of 98 going into 99 where they had a house show. And I could be a year off. It could be 99 into 2000. But I thought there was a house show in Memphis the last week of the year. And it drew like $450,000, some obscene amount of money. Because, well, you know, Lawler was on the card because it was Memphis, but it was just that the product was so hot. And I could be a year off, but I seem to remember it being 98 into 99.
I'm looking now on Graham's site.
Yeah, I am too, actually.
I don't see it in 98 because it ends, and we'll start our next time you're on with us. We'll start with
all right. Well, I might be a year off.
Awesome Worcester show, but.
But, yeah, it was feeling good.
End of 99.
Yeah, right here, December 30th, 1999. 18,008 sellout at the Pyramid.
Okay, yep. So I was a year off, but yep. Damn, right?
Yeah, Lawler pinned Midian. So there you go.
Oh yeah, and it was seriously, it was a B show.
Well, yeah. Triple H and Rock were on the main event. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, Triple H and Rock. Other than that, right?
Yeah, X-Pac, Dudley. Yeah, we'll get there.
Good crew. Good crew, but nothing like, you know.
Right, yeah, not the main.
You know, Triple Tower of Doom, you know, Flaming Midgets. We weren't doing any of that stuff.
That would have been great if you did. If you did Midgets on Fire, that would have been awesome.
I'm ready to book it. But, yeah, so when do we get to cross the bridge into 1999?
It'll be a little bit because we got to get through some of the shows, and we got a lot coming up with Mania Preview. Couple things, though, I wanted to ask you. First of all, Kev, I did check in, and Shelton and Charlie Haas did wrestle 2006. Hang on, Grant gave me the details. April 17th, Raw from St. Louis, they fought. And then they had some house show matches. This is when Haas returned to the company.
Gotcha.
Also, we want to have you back on. We had Scott Hudson on a few weeks ago.
What a good dude.
And it was awesome. We had such a good time. And like you, he said he'd come back and join us anytime. So I'd like to have you and him on together just to sit around and bullshit.
Okay.
I think that'd be a lot of fun. Just kind of get that competing, you know, what was going on in each company, you know, at the same time. Because we get into a lot of his career, and we actually spent more time on Global than I think anyone wanted to hear about. But I was such a Global fan growing up.
I'd want to hear about Global.
Oh, so good. He talked about a lot of it. It was interesting. I watched that religiously as a 12-year-old.
Oh, I was in high school and doing the same thing.
It was good stuff. We talked about the moon match, or whatever the hell it was, the skydiving match when they run up in the Mike Davis and everything. Anyway.
God.
So, yeah.
Scott and I are very much, you know, every time, because we've done interviews together before, and we never called a match together, but that was actually Dusty's idea. I'll tell you a quick funny story.
Yep.
We were doing an independent show in Florida for my buddy Casey Thompson in, I think, 2005, somewhere around there. And it was for... down in Fort Lauderdale. So anyway, all these TNA guys were booked, and Dusty and me. So the limo pulls up to kick everybody over to the building from the hotel. And it's AJ Styles and Shane Douglas and this one and that one, and everybody gets in. And the door, there's no more room? There's no more room? Okay. And who's standing outside the limo? Me and Dusty. Door closes and it drives away. So there's me in the dream. So these two young guys who were driving, picking things up and doing runs, I said, hey, listen, can you guys give us a ride? Yeah, sure, I got my truck. So the dude pulls up in some beat-up, you know, SUV, and we jump in, and Dream's in the front, and I'm in the back. And he's like, well, it's good for my gimmick, baby, you know, like, pulling up a limousine, it's not right, you know. So anyway, here I am in the state of Florida with my idol, Dusty Rhodes, who was my favorite wrestler growing up, and I just was over the moon. And he's the... I have very few pictures with wrestlers. He's the one guy that I said, can I have a picture with you? Because I'm a big fan. And of course, so he paid me a great compliment. He said, Kevin Kelly, if I had $1 million right now, I'd get back on Turner. I'd put you right back there. Put you and Scott Hudson together in the microphone. It would be the best show ever.
Like, awesome.
Dream, baby, you get that money and make that call. I'll be right there.
Make it happen.
But yeah, so anytime Scott and I have done interviews together, It's like one brain, because I think we both think on the same wavelength on a lot of things. So you're going to hear a lot of us in agreement with the other.
Yeah, well, that's what made me think of doing you guys having you on together, because talking to him reminded us a lot of chatting with you. And just a guy like you, just a fan, you know, and it reminded me of that time we had you on and we just talked about, you know, the stuff you liked growing up. And I want to do that more with him than talking about his career that we did last time. He tells a great Larry Zbyszko story at the end of that episode. So for anyone out there who hasn't heard
it. His life and his career goes parallel with mine, mm-hmm. but completely different circles, like very little crossover. You know, his was Georgia and then WCW, Global Georgia to WCW. Mine was like Florida and then New York. You know, so it's been, we kind of leapfrogged each other and moved around and passed and highs and lows, but probably almost similar time frame. His is a little longer than mine.
And that schedule you told us about earlier that you had this weekend, that was his life for like 4 years, doing, you know, flying to Nitro, and then he'd come back to work in Atlanta, and then he'd go out for the paper. I was tired when he was telling us about the hectic things he did to make that all happen. We're keeping his regular job and working for WCW at the same time.
That was the amazing thing, is that he had his, as we laughed about over the weekend, his shoot job. That was one of the things we were talking about over the weekend. But it's a, that's just a, his life outside of wrestling is certainly much more interesting to me than wrestling itself, you know, being in law and everything like that. I'm fascinated by him. I think he's a very smart guy.
Yes, and a cool guy. And he definitely seemed interested in the same, so we'll get you on together.
Okay.
Soon. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up PTB Nation. Hope you enjoyed our yearly or semi-yearly, or what's six times a year that we can say? Six yearly?
Bi-monthly.
Bi-monthly. There you go. Yeah.
It's been a long day. All right. So that is not as long as Kevin, though. So, Kevin, thank you so much after this busy, busy weekend, spending some time with us here tonight. We know the nation loves hearing from you. And we love chatting with you. We will talk to you before Mania weekend. Scott, I will talk to you later this week, Wednesday night. We'll be chatting Royal Rumble 1999 with Mike Rude, the Jay Womet contest winner. Be joining us. And we'll talk all about the Mick Foley Rock Chair Shot Fest. I'm sure Kevin will talk all about that when he comes back on with us again, too. So,
yes.
For Scott Criscolo and Kevin Kelly, I am Justin Rosero, PTV Nation. We'll talk to you Wednesday night. And Kevin won't be as tired by then.
Yeah.
Should have turned heel on Michael Cole.
Should have.
No, it was fine.
Should have hit him. Should have hit him.
There was a part of me that was kind of like, hey, that's fine. I don't want to follow Jim Ross either.
Should have hit him with the 10,000-pound tombstone.
Yeah, I would have been, you know, glad to assume the role, but it was never mine. You know, when I didn't get the SmackDown job, that was it. I was done.